All right, thank you. Welcome. This is Alexander, who will be talking to us about DNS and free IPA with some Samba AD integration. Good luck.
Yeah, so thank you for taking this talk. I kind of feel that sometimes the like traditional corporate environments, they don't get attention anymore, especially in the DNS, which supposed to be tangling together the public environments. Like, and we are talking now about the stuff that happens behind sometimes closed doors, like this room, right? And in the enterprise environments, you traditionally had the setup where you admins control everything. So they have full coverage of what they do there, including how the names result and so on. And more to that, most of those names have no reason to exist outside of that environment and or be resolved outside that environment. So two big kind of projects that try to implement the enterprise domains infrastructure in, well, open source world, Samba AD, or Samba in general for already 30 years, and free IPA since 2007, so we exist for quite a long time. And I just happen to be in both of these projects for quite some time, so I started working with Samba in actually 1998, and to the point that got invited to the team in 2003. So it's quite a time. And then I joined Red Hat in 2011, and I cannot get rid of this job anymore. As a part of it, I'm also contributing to MIT Kerberos, but Greg Hudson happily rewrites my patches, so I'm only contributor, not a committer or anything. But yeah, we go there. So what is these DNS for enterprise domains? Really, when we talk about the enterprise domains, it's almost always equivalent of saying unspoken Active Directory word. Right, so Microsoft did a great job in the 90s by looking at the Unix environments, taking Unix technologies, taking open source stuff and projects developed there, combining them in a good and sometimes unorthodox way and bringing them, selling them so successfully that maybe 95% of all enterprise environments in the world for past 30 years were Active Directory. It's almost at that time was a given that you deal with Active Directory. So a lot of projects had to start looking at the compatibility with that. And certainly Free IPA started as one of those. Original aim was to get not compatible with Active Directory, but as easy as Active Directory for deployment for Linux stuff. But later we came to the same point that we have to integrate with Active Directory, and we had to add kind of integration ways, which made us, I mean, FreeAPA looking as if it's Active Directory from the point of view of Active Directory, not the users. But the typical thing is there are domain controllers, domain members. Domain controllers are typically Windows machines and Linux for, in case of Microsoft Active Directory and Samba AD, which kind of try to implement the equivalent based on the protocol compatibility. And the domain members are clients that enrolled in these domains, and they are all whatever they are. But the whole thing is, literally, we take LDAP as the centralized store with the replication mechanism across multiple domain controllers. We take some control protocols based on DC-RPC mechanism, which comes from Alpha DEC and like goes back to I think 79 and 78, so pretty old one. And then the Kerberos to combine them all and do mutual authentication and so on. And in IPA, it's exactly the same, except that the management APIs are basically HTTPS-based REST-like thingy in itself. So all of this thing actually is heavily dependent on DNS resolution. And it's not just A records or something. Kerberos is extremely fragile, at least according to the popular opinion, because in order to map the Kerberos service principles to certain resources, you have to have unified view on those resources and on those names. And most of the Kerberos principles, they are, well, built from service name slash what we call like a host name or full host name. So you immediately get this natural mapping into the DNS view of your domain. And if you're all of your machines in the same DNS domain, that's easy, that you can do expansion and so on. But in reality, your environment might have multiple DNS domains belonging to the same logical domain. And this thing that when we talk about domain, we have to specify, is it Active Directory domain or logical domain, organizational domain, and then DNS domain, is something that is kind of evasive for administrators. Many administrators miss this point. They think about domain as organizational one. The DNS is a minute detail for them, which causes a lot of trouble, a lot of troubleshooting problems as well. So both domain controllers and domain members, they rely on the DNS, on the auto-discovery for Kerberos. So you have to find out which Kerberos realm you're in. You have to discover where your domain controllers are, and there are protocols within Active Directory which all Windows clients are actually following, how they find this. So they look into these details, they look SRV records, they follow some lookups, and sometimes we cannot use anything other than that because they always do this. You cannot really say to Windows machine that, hey, my domain controller is there by IP address, because it needs to mutually authenticate it. So authenticate itself there and authenticate the controller that it's the one who it presents itself. And for doing that, it needs to have this on the Kerberos level as the service principles, and they are constructed of DNS names, not IP addresses. So it's kind of tied together, but not really obvious to administrators. And this is how it looks like for any domains. This is from Microsoft specification, MSADTS. It's technical spec for Active Directory. So all non-read-only domain controllers must register a bunch of SRV records of this type, where .x is domain, and then there are a few different expansions there. And DNS people know that this one is against typical RFCs in this area. Here they are. Your client must allow this. Okay, we already have most of these knowledge encoded in the resolver libraries, in the DNS components and so on. But 20 years ago, this was a big trouble if you wanted to combine all these things together. On the domain members, we do auto-discovery, whom to talk to, then which server out of what we discovered we have to talk to, which is also SRV records out of this set, the first three of them. And they might not belong to our domain, they might belong to a domain we trust, and we have to find someone whom we talk from that domain that we trust, or how we delegate that. There's very weird situation in most cases. But they also have to tell where they are. So this is dynamic update thingy that is typically nowadays done with a lot of different protocols. Most of the public DNS systems allow you to do some REST-like API update. But this is enterprise domain. The only thing they trust is their mutual authentication, which is essentially Kerberos, right? So all of them support using the GSS T-SIG, and that's RFC 3645, but with a twist. So the spec is actually called GSSA, MSGSSA. It's public. It's implemented in most places, in most libraries, or traditional libraries, like say Bind has this implementation and Bind Utils, therefore. But most of the newer languages like Go, Rust, people re-implement all of this and they have hard time finding out these things. They are all documented. So for example, HMAC-MD5 from TK RFC is not used, actually banned. The MSGSA spec says must not use this one. And the reason for that is a bit unobvious, because remember evolution of the Active Directory. It started with Windows NT domains structure, which used RC4 hash to encode passwords. So when Active Directory came in and they switched to use Kerberos, they actually used HMAC RC4 to encode passwords, which actually takes just that hash and gets it into the Kerberos hash, one-to-one. So if you take HMAC MD5 here, it's essentially that hash. So you disclose your machine account credential immediately. So it's not allowed to use that one. You have to use something better. In this case, the Kerberos service ticket to sign off this. But in the end, your result is something where the digest to sign the last message is not really fitting into the original RFC for GSS T6. So they extended the way how it's done. And if you just implemented the RFC, you don't get this. Again, most of the code in stuff like Bind supports it. The wildcard updates are not supported. And they are, like, this is a quirk. You cannot do wildcard update. You have to specify the correct one. This now bites if you try to use NS update with GSS T-SIG to sign updates like proof of possession of a DNS record for ACME. And if you do the wildcard entry, you cannot use that. Against Windows DNS server, but you can do this with Bind, for example. I guess also PowerDNS does the same and does support it. And on the on Bind side, for example, the actual access control who can write is based on the fact that you can match a more generic, much more generic ECHO system, access control system in Active Directory. It's literally like an object in LDAP has a bunch of access controls associated with it. And DNS update comes in, authenticates as that machine account, and that machine account has to have a mapping to what is allowed in this access control list. But because we are not doing it the same way, Bind implements like 8 variants of matching Kerberos principle to what is happening to the zone. So yeah, 4 of them based on the machine account name, which is like real account name with the dollar, like machine dollar something. And 4 of them rely on, because that's equivalent of host slash something in the normal Kerberos, 4 of them rely on the Kerberos. That doesn't help administrators because they don't understand what it is. And reading through the documentation, it doesn't help either, because the documentation says this is how it's done in Active Directory. It's not how it's done in Active Directory. It's the visual effect of what is being done underneath in the Active Directory. But you, if you automate this, if you hide this within the actual code implementation, then most of the users don't really care, except that you have to put this ACL on the zone file, right? The other part of you don't really run NS update manually. You run it as a part of a higher level activity. So, for example, in a free APA, we use SSSD to combine all of this. And SSSD looks for network changes and then fires up an NS update with a file that contains all the details and uses the machine account key tab, which may or may not be containing the machine credential, so machine name with the dollar in the end, or it may contain the host principle and so on. This the same if you use SSSD against pure Active Directory stuff. Samba on its own has two different DNS update implementations historically. So there's NS update GSS, which nobody uses these days, I hope. It comes from the tool that is called NetVampire, which was used to slurp data from Windows NT domains and populate your Samba AD environment. And then the other one is Samba DNS update, which is similarly to what SSSD does, is a wrapper on top of NS update. It generates the update file. It verifies entries that should go there, chooses the right credential to authenticate with, and does all this thing. There was another one utility that was used internally to propagate this information over DC-RPC interfaces, and that's not visible to admins, that's not configurable. Then the domain controllers, if we come back, they really don't really depend on DNS themselves, except being able to find each other or find the whoever they talk to. So once DNS zone set up, dynamic updates is about the only issue that you get there. The changes for zones can come from other sources, and one of them, the big one, is replication. So one of them is this set of protocols built on DC-RPC. In Active Directory, that's the DRCU, which is replication mechanism between all Active Directory things. In Free APA, we use LDAP replication that our LDAP server implements, which is eventual consistency. So you get sometimes inconsistent situation, but eventually it gets consistent. But it's what's important, it's modification from outside of the DNS server, so you have to sync details between them. And on FreeAPA side, so we can work with the external one. Samba also can work with the external one. You don't get the dynamic updates in that case, but if you do integrate, then we use Bind, and we have a plugin that uses internal Bind API, the dynamic database API, and it basically able to look up in LDAP and do updates over to the LDAP, so it kind of keeps the synchronization. It works fairly well. When it doesn't work, it's harder to debug, and that happens. You can manage, again, this through different things. There is support for DNSSEC through the open DNSSEC, because we need to deal with PKSS11 tokens, and Bind only has, like, I think it's a file system-based DNSSEC store, and we need to kind of, again, transfer data between them. What's important, all free APA servers, they replicate to each other, and they all become DNS server, authoritative DNS servers. So there is not a one authoritative DNS server for a Zonon, but a lot of them, and sometimes that creates problems for clients thinking doing something. But surprisingly, all of this works relatively well with the large amount of zones, to the point that we figured out that we have a lot of users that actually use our web UI, Free API web UI, to exclusively manage their DNS zones. And I got recently a note from one of the users that they actually write in their own management UI for that utility, because you can use this bind DIN the build up outside of IPA, just against normal LDAP server as well. In Samba case, they have obviously external one, but they also integrate with bind through a different API, this DLZ API, which I know bind team kind of wants to deprecate. At least there are good reasons for doing that, and that means for Samba it's a big problem. It also has its own DNS implementation, but it's not scalable to the level that Samba AD needs. And so we have kind of interesting problems because of these APIs. They're both internal, and they are not really stable. So bind team refactors them and changes at will, and we find out that especially in Debian, where the new thing is uploaded, you cannot really build or rebuild bind in the build up because it's API completely changed internally. In Free API, in Fedora and RHEL, we kind of control how updates of bind happens, so we coordinate our activities, but this is typical problem. So 920.4 changelog says DLZ API will be removed or consider it removed in future. So it's at least a message to prepare to do something different. And then when it was like 8 months ago, this issue was open saying that we don't really want to install developer headers anymore, so you wouldn't get the access to API publicly anymore. Well, it's not finished yet, but with the 920, the script that installs the like information about how you compile against bind is not available already. And I'll just go like maybe 2 minutes about where we are. So we are working on the rewrite of bind in the build-up to be compatible with the bind going forward. Ideally, maybe get to the point to discuss with bind team, maybe merge this code eventually. We are working on the encrypted DNS setup from the ground, like before you get machine started, to the point where you have your infrastructure deployed with this. The PDF is available. You can look close to it. But it's a combination of bind and unbound, because bind version we have currently doesn't have all support for features we need. And because we're stuck, we have complexity on backporting these things. That's fun, probably for beer stories. And we also have challenges because some of the unrelated changes that happened in other open source components force us to do some decisions. So for example, OpenSSL deprecated one way of loading crypto primitives and said you have to do the other one. RHEL 10 will completely remove that API, the old one, which is used in bind 9.16.18, but not used in bind 9.20, but we cannot use bind 9.20 for the... So it's a circus that we have to enjoy, probably. And the other challenge is that by the time we will solve all of this, there will be this deprecation of everything crypto-wise. So post-quantum crypto is already being pushed by the governmental institutions, and by 2030 we will get done. So that's actually all. Thank you.
One question to your matrix. If people here have questions, please find Alexander later, and maybe you and Andre should have a chat about Byte.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.